This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
Just to let you know that Hepburnshire did pass a motion at its council meeting tonight in favour of same-sex marriage and in favour of sending a motion in support to Parliament asking MPs there to support the marriage equality bill. So well done, Hepburnshire, and well done to the Mayor, Sebastian Klein, who's been driving this one through. In the meantime, I recently came across an interview with a very well-known and long-standing American activist, a guy called Cleve Jones. If you saw the film Milk, you'll know that Cleve Jones is the cute one who helped out Harvey Milk. Now, he had some things to say about present state of activism and the history of activism in the USA, and I think some of those points apply to us too. This is one of the first things he said.
The last 2 years have been the most extraordinary 2 years in the history of our movement. I've never seen anything like what I have seen in the last 2 years. We have moved forward in a profound way. I don't give any credit for that to any of these established groups, not Human Rights Campaign, not the Task Force, not National Center for Lesbian Rights, not Lambda Legal. It's come from an insurgency. It's come from the kids in the street again, which I never thought I'd see happen again. It's come from people, individuals like Dan Savage. It's come from the kids taking their gay and partners to the proms. It's an amazing time, but I'm very angry with some of these established groups, but I think sometimes people are picking on the wrong things. We've won over a great many white intellectuals and liberals. Now we need to do a little bit harder work and get into these minority communities and communities of faith and immigrant populations. This gets back to me the big issue, which is that our movement, the LGBT movement, is part of a larger movement. And we need to accept that history, celebrate, embrace that history, and understand that that is where the moral strength of our movement derives. We're part of a much bigger effort. And anything we've had to confront, I look at the AIDS pandemic, what happened to my generation of gay men, 80% of us did not survive. If you came out between 1970 and 1975, you were a gay man, 80% of us didn't make it. But that is just the tiniest fragment of the big picture that is the HIV horror show. You know, so we need to fight for our rights. But I really think that there's a great many of our leaders who, once we win marriage equality, are just going to think everything's fine. And I don't. We've got a lot of challenges ahead of us. And I want us all to be part of that struggle.
Well, he's made a number of points there, which I think are probably equally valid in the Australian context. Brent, I saw you making notes there and looking sort of very interested at various points. First off, I'd like to start with what he said about none of this has come from the big organisations. Most of this has come from what you might call mavericks, like Dan Savage, striking out in new directions. And it's come from kids on the street, kids taking their partners to proms, that kind of thing. Would you say that's how it's been here as well?
Well, I think that there is something, there's a tenor of what he's saying that I think is really appropriate. That's about community engagement and community capacity building. This is about saying, not to the established, well-heeled man or woman, this is about saying, you know, you can make a difference. I think that there are a lot of people out there who want to contribute. They just don't know how. And I think what we need to do in our organizations, our, in our establishments, is open up our doors and start saying, you know, this is how you can contribute. And even more so, if we want to go that one extra step, this is how you can become a leader. And, you know, leadership is born. I think that there are born leaders, but there are also people who can be enabled to be extraordinary leaders. And what they need is a mentor. They need someone to hold their hand. And if we can start doing that more often, I think we're going to see not only our community grow in terms of its power, but in its diversity.
Gregory, your partner, Michael, comes into this in two ways, and you've backed him up all the way on all this. He comes into this in two ways, in my mind. He has been one of these mavericks, one of these individuals who's just struck out and taken action without getting himself into an organization and trying to pull the organization along. He just struck out on his own.
Yes.
And the other thing is he has, albeit rather combatively, as Cleve puts it, engaged with the faith community.
Yes.
Do you think that's been positive or negative? I mean, I know you're biased on this, but
I can be rather objective about this as well, because you know I think that there is a place for people like Michael to get out there and take swings at them, because it generates conversation, and even if that conversation is negative, I think that positives can come from that. And you know, sometimes it's about standing back after you've swung the axe to let somebody else clean up. And that seems to work really well. So I think you need the mavericks. I think you need the people that are prepared to push it and say, you know, what you're doing is wrong, and say it so clearly that everyone else just feels uncomfortable. And that brings people in and it says, well, you know, we don't like the way you're doing it, so we think we should do it this way. And I think that's got huge benefits. And I think Michael's done a lot in the faith community, in the Jewish community in particular, in actually changing their perceptions. And he's done that by going and swinging at them.
Well, he certainly put things on the agenda that weren't there before. He certainly forced people to confront things they didn't want to confront.
Yes.
And he's not made himself many friends in the process in certain parts of the Jewish community, but I think that's what you've got to be prepared to do if you're going to go out there and swing the
axe,
as you put it. I mean, you've done a bit of axe swinging yourself.
I do. I like a bit of axe swinging occasionally as well.
Because you stood as a secular party candidate.
I did,
and you
yeah.
pushed the secular barrow quite a bit against the religious fundamentalists.
That's right. Look, I'm not at all against people having religious faith. What I am against, though, is telling me that I need to have it as well. So don't use your faith to tell me what my ethics are. I can do that all by myself. So there's no place for those sort of religious ethics in a secular society.
Well, you know, my point about that is, yes, all well and good, you've got your rules of your religion, you've got your ethics, you've got the way you think about the world. I can respect that. What I can't respect is when you say that, despite the fact that I don't believe in your religion and it's got nothing to do with me, you want me to follow your rules.
That's right.
And you want to impose your rules on me, who I'm an atheist. You want to impose them, say if you're a Catholic, you want to impose them on Methodists and Hindus and Jews and whatever we got, you know, as if your morality somehow trumped everybody else's. That's where I argue with the faith communities. You must get a certain amount of stick from faith people, faith-based people. I mean, in the early days of the AIDS epidemic, it was all down to being God's judgment on you, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, look.
And all that rubbish.
And I grew up in the Bible Belt of Canada, so I know exactly what that is like. I think you're right. I think I don't want anyone imposing their ethics on me. I have my own set of ethics, and they've grown up not just through my parents and through my environment. They've grown up through my experience. Mm. You know, there's nothing worse than being told that you're right or you're wrong in many ways. I think what you want to do is you want to be told that you belong.
Yeah. Let's hear one more thing that Cleve Jones has to say. He's talking about the broader movements and not just the gay movement.
The movements that really change lives, the movements that touch the hearts of millions of people, are those movements that find common ground and build struggles based on those commonalities rather than focusing on the differences. It's so ironic. If someone had told me in 1973, when I joined Gay Liberation, as we quaintly called it then, if you had told me that I would, in the year 2011, be fighting for the right to join the army and get married, I think I probably would have tried to date women. And I want young people in particular to understand that we're more than a market. We're not just some demographic subset for corporations to market products to. We are more than that.
Well, I think he makes a very good point there. I mean, I was a member of Gay Liberation back in the 70-somethings. And yes, certainly the last thing on our minds was wanting to join the armed forces or get married. We have moved a long way from there. Are we too conservative now, do you think, Brent?
The part of his statement I think really resonated for me was the notion that where we find allegiances, you know, and I was recently chatting with a colleague and we were saying, why is it that, you know, I'm not so perplexed when straight men have a problem with gay men. I think what I'm more perplexed about is when someone of an ethnic minority, someone of a religious minority, someone, women, have a problem with gay men. I think to myself, why? Do you recognize the struggles you went through? Do you know anything about the histories? And to not find that synergy, I find incomprehensible.
Yeah, but so many people don't want to be sort of lumped in with us, as it were. I mean, I think a lot of the objections to gay marriage that I'm hearing, you know, on that live blog I was doing on the Age website this week, there are a lot of people coming in saying, you shouldn't have the right to marriage because if you guys get the right to marriage, it devalues my marriage. Now, you can only hold that opinion if you think that I'm worth less than you are.
Absolutely. You know, I've been married for 8 years. Legally married for 8 years. I've been with my partner for 13. I've got to tell you, I cannot see in any way, shape, or form that my marriage has devalued any of my family,
it's got nothing
any of my friends.
Do with anyone else.
Absolutely not.
You know, what's going to happen if gay marriage is legalized? Gays are going to get married. End of story.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
And there's one last quote here I want to get in from Cleve. It's a little bit longer, but I want to play it because I think it's important.
One of the problems, though, is that we are so different from each other. Look at any other minority, and they have so much more to bind them together. Magnus Hirschfeld, the great German homosexual emancipation movement activist during the Weimar Republic, complained about this in 1927, saying that homosexuals have no sense of solidarity, that there's no group of people less disposed to organize together to fight for their own fundamental rights than homosexuals. So this has been a problem for a while, but joking aside, gay people are born into rich families and poor families. We're born into black and brown and white skins. We're born into families of Hindu faith or Muslim or Baptist or Catholic or Mormon or no faith at all. We're born into families of different political ideologies, different national backgrounds, different histories. So what we have in common is that we're different, and we're different in a way that has to do with gender and sexuality, and we're different in the ways that difference has moved us internally, how we've responded to it. But whether people want to admit it or not, whether they like it or not, our movement grew out of the larger movement. Our movement grew out of the peace movement, the anti-war movement, the civil rights movement, the feminist movement. Those are our roots. And increasingly, I find that the community and its leadership, I find many of them to be self-absorbed, unconcerned about the larger issues.
I'd cut it off there because he went on a big flight of fancy at that point. But I think the point is made that a lot of people do seem to be very inward looking and they're not that interested in making connections to the women's movement, the various struggles for racial acceptance and so on and so forth. Do you think we're any better here in Australia than they are in America at that sort of thing?
Gregor? Yes.
Yeah.
I do. I think we're better than the Americans at that sort of thing. Yes, I think we
are. Absolutely.
You know, I work in a place where we've got about 100 people, and we come from all walks of life, all sorts of faiths, all sorts of non-faiths, and we just get on. And I think that it's a great place to work, a great environment to be in when you have people that just get on.
Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there. There's obviously huge issues around all that. Thank you to This Way Out for the use of bits from that interview. If you check out the rainbowreporter.com website, there's links to that and all today's issues.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the rainbow community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.